whether they're turned away from you or whether they have a hand a lot of the time over their face or their chin. You know, people tell us all sorts of things about what's happening for them without needing to say anything. A researcher, I really got into this, so I went looking in different areas. Please, again, bear with me. I'll get back to that text in just a second. But first, I would just like you to have a look at that. Who's that? It is Usain Bolt. And, of course, this is a demonstration of physiology that we were used to seeing him do on a regular basis. And these academic researchers types, when they describe physiology, they actually have a name for this exact pose, and the name is pride. And it's arms raised toward the heavens and the chin slightly up. But what they've found really fascinating is that people who have been blind from birth do this exact same thing when they win something. Isn't that interesting? You see, I think there's this funny thing that happens for us, perhaps historically as Baptists. We tend to think that we need to get our beliefs right, we need to get our thinking right, so that we will behave appropriately, so we will act right. So behaviour and action follow belief. It's a very Baptist way, it's a very evangelical way of doing things. Other denominations sort of flip it on its head, sometimes perhaps too much so. But, you know, Catholics and other denominations have a lot more rhythm and routine because they realise that the way that they actually act in the world makes them feel a certain way, and the way that they feel affects their thinking in turn. It's really fascinating. Really fascinating to think about the way that it is that we actually are as a human being in relation to the world. What is it that we say to the world by the way that we present ourselves to it? And there's a number of scriptures that you will read where Jesus went off early to pray. Jesus looked towards the heavens and gave thanks. Jesus broke bread. A voice from heaven said, "This is my son with whom I am well pleased." And the text that comes to us from the Gospels today is the text that is so odd that you would think that if anyone was actually writing this text and wanted to present a religion that was actually sort of comprehensible to the average person, they wouldn't include stories like this one. And so the disciples are all together and they're talking about what happened, and Jesus himself stood among them. Again, we have a standing among, we have a presence, we have a bodily reality in the midst of the disciples. And he said to them, "Peace be with you." And they were startled and terrified and thought that he was a ghost. He said to them, "Why are you frightened and why do your doubts arise in your hearts? Look at my hands and my feet. See that it's myself. Touch and see, for a ghost does not have flesh and bones as you see that I have." And when he had said this, he showed them his hands and his feet. And while in their joy they were disbelieving and still wondering, he said to them, "Have you got anything to eat?" Turns out this dying and coming back to life thing is, you know, makes for hungry work. And so he took some fish and he ate it in their presence, and he said to them, "These are my words, what I spoke to you while I was still with you, that everything written about me in the law of Moses, the prophets, and the Psalms must be fulfilled." Then he opened their minds to understand the scriptures, and he said to them, Thus, it's written that the Messiah is to suffer and to rise from the dead on the third day, and that repentance and forgiveness of sins is to be proclaimed in his name to all nations, beginning from Jerusalem. You are, what's that word? Witnesses of these things. You are part of this. Here is the story that God's been telling through this whole thing, and here it is, and you are part of it. This has come after the crucifixion. This has come after all these people had seen their hopes and their dreams nailed to a Roman cross. And here is Jesus standing among them. And again, if we stop and think for a second what it is that's happening on the cross physiologically, it's mind-blowing to think about. This is God on the cross. God on the cross. God open to the world. God at the place where history actually transitions, where the age of God and the current age intersect, the place that X marks the spot in a sense. And what happens on the cross? Well, the worst happens. The worst that anyone can imagine happens. The worst is realized. People's nightmares are realized. Jesus' death happens. Suffering happens. It's an astonishing statement that when you open yourself to the world, the reality is that there will, of course, be suffering. But what the cross asks us to consider, and what this bodily, real bodily resurrection of Jesus asks to consider, is that right alongside the reality of suffering is the possibility of redemption, of rebirth. The crucifixion asks us to consider that when the worst happens, and the worst does happen, that we'll be okay. I've said it before, but the cross is like a precious diamond that the longer that you hold it up and turn it over in your hands, the more it has to teach us. But it represents fundamentally this realization that along with suffering, with faith in God, is the ability for us to do something about that suffering. Now, like I said, it's hard to know what to make of these texts, but here they are. Here we are. Sound familiar? Here we are. But the significance for us as to our bodies and as to what we can do with the choices that are in front of us, what is it that we're going to do with them? Recognizing that Jesus has done something brand new. Now, I recognize that when we talk about the age to come and the resurrection of Jesus and the fact that that's what he promises for us, we start talking about a lot that we don't know, because all we have is Jesus in these scriptures. That's all we have. The rest of what life in eternity will be like is sort of like signs and symbols that sort of point towards a fog. We don't actually know much other than what we get from texts like these that describe Jesus. But what we do know for this resurrected Jesus is that, first of all, the old rules don't apply to him anymore. It would appear that he can come and go in and out of locked doors, can be in one place and then another. It seems like time travel becomes a real possibility, or at least teleportation. But we see as well that in the midst of that real body, that real physicality, that this is not just a spirit, this is not just a ghost, this is someone who has achieved something. He has the scars of that life as part of his body. But the old rules of the world in which that body existed don't apply anymore. This is the Jesus that called forth Peter from his false self into his true self. He said, Peter, start to become your resurrected self. Peter, stand up. Put your shoulders back. You'll be okay. And even when it's not okay, you'll still be okay. It's the sentiment of the psalmist in the boldness that he approaches God when he says, answer me when I call, O God of my right. There's a relationship of such substance there that the psalmist actually demands something of God. You gave me room when I was in distress. Be gracious to me and hear my prayer. It's like as he works it through, the psalmist comes more and more into character, into contact with the character of God. But he still asks these questions. How long, you people, shall my honour suffer shame? How long will you love vain words and seek after lies? There's a boldness of someone who's standing up, who says that there's tension in this life, there's suffering in this life, and a relationship with God is one of the ways that people deal with suffering. I put this picture up. It's a simple little animation, really, isn't it? But what I want you to think about is the fact that if you can imagine that that stool that's there represents the pain in your life. And we all have it. It's all there. Everybody has pain. The nature and degree of that pain is different from person to person, but we all have pain. But if we haven't come into contact with in a relationship with the living God through Christ, and if we haven't constructed our life in such a way that there's actually some shape to it and some values to it and some rhythm to it that give it support, then those legs are going to be pretty flimsy on that stool. Whereas the reality is that we have the ability to shape our life and to respond to the call of God in such a way that the pain, if you think about pain as the seat of that stool, whether that's broken relationships or issues with health or work situations, we have the ability to make choices that give that stool some good support. And so these simple pictures perhaps give us the ability to think about the pain in our life and how it affects our posture, the way that we are in the world. Have we been beaten down to such an extent that we actually feel physically curled over, that we feel depressed? And what are we going to do about that? How are we going to move towards being not so curled over and not so defeated? How is it that we will respond to Jesus' affirmation that we'll be okay? So it gives us the ability to think about a few things, perhaps. What are the coping strategies that we have for life? What is it that we turn to when the chips are down? What are the options that we consider? And do we feel like we're stretched for time to do those things, to respond to those issues? And I think that when you consider people that have a good support structure for the pain that they face in their life, they tend to have good coping strategies and they consider their options and they're okay with the realization that being formed into the person that they believe that God is calling them to be is going to take a little bit of time. When I was away at Compass Conference with the kids from school and with Catherine, one of the animations that was presented to us was this one. Can you see that, or is that, you can see that. Can you see this? And I've asked you to consider some reasonably absurd things this morning, like lobsters. So I thought, well, let me ask you to consider your life as a septic flow. Because the reality is that we actually all need a septic system in our life in some way, don't we? If we didn't, gross. But we have an inflow of material that needs to be drained away from our house. And sometimes, you know, if you have too many people over at your house, you will have too much inflow into your septic system and it can get blocked up. So sometimes we need some better boundaries in our life so we can regulate the flow. But if we consider the fact that in a septic system, even when it's working well, the reality is that in the bottom, you know, this is considering a house that is not connected to main sewer system. But if this is a septic tank that exists, who has a septic tank here? Yeah, there we go. Well done. I think, I don't know. The reality is that even with a well-functioning septic system, we have sometimes in the bottom the build-up of sludge. Stuff that just sits there for a long time, and unless we actually deal with it, it just builds up and up and up. And I think this is a little bit like life too. We have a reality to our life that if just through the normal give and take of normal relationships, there's sometimes a build-up of sludge. Sometimes we need some help getting rid of that stuff. Sometimes we need to actually forgive people if we're stuck with something that we can't let go of. Sometimes we need to be reconciled to someone that we've hurt. And then as we consider the actual reality of our septic tank here, and how it's working, we get to ask ourselves, how is it working? Have you been putting stuff into the septic tank that we all know we shouldn't flush in to the septic tank? Because our mums have kindly written a note, please don't flush these things down the septic, down the toilet. You know what I'm saying? And so it can get blocked up, and again, it's another place where sometimes we can have a look in different ways. And right here, there's this thing that says manholes inspection covers. And this is where I want to join it back to this idea that if we look at things like our posture to the world, our openness to the world, our openness to other people, how it is we're relating to one another, what are our words like, what's our language like, are we kind to others? You know, are we patient with others or are we really defensive? Do we react really badly with our words? What's our posture like? How's our overall health? These are things that I would call the manhole covers, the inspection covers. And so how well our whole system is working can be sort of viewed by what sort of environment it is that we're creating around our house. Because a well-functioning septic system actually has the possibility of giving life and producing fruit. And so we need to ask ourselves, what is the fruit around us actually like? What sort of fruit is being born by our words and our attitudes and our actions and stuff like that? There's a man this week, he knocked on my door, he popped around my house at about 9:30, 10 o'clock, and he said, Mike, listen, there's this family that I know of, they're about to end up on the street. The dad bolted about a week ago, the mum's not coping, they're three kids, I don't even know if they've eaten for the last few days. Anyway, they can't make the rent and they're about to be turfed out onto the street. And so I'm like, oh, wow, you know, maybe... Well, I guess I could make a couple of calls, and I think we've got an emergency sort of cash account at church. We could get some help together for this family and help these guys out. And he was like, "Yeah, that'd be really good." And as I was just about to do this, I said, "Did you say they're about to be turfed out onto the street?" And he said, "Yeah, yeah." I said, "Well, how do you know this?" He goes, "Oh, well, I'm the landlord." Thank you, Margaret. it wasn't a true story. It was a joke. And Margaret got that quicker than everyone else. The irony, of course, is that there's pain that exists in our life, but there is much that we can do something about. There is much pain that we can affect for good. But we tend to make it someone else's problem. Doctors, parents maybe, our spouse, yeah, maybe sometimes even a pastor. Now, all those people, of course, they're necessary to a functioning and healthy society. But I think that when we look at the story of Peter and we think about the way that Peter is called forth by Jesus, but the obedience that Peter shows in standing up and addressing the crowd and speaking with a loud voice, we see that he was under no compulsion to do this, that no one was making him do this, that he was choosing to pass on a message of grace and deliverance to a people who were sorely needing it. He was telling a story that Jesus had been telling since the beginning of his ministry, that in him and through him a new exodus was actually occurring, that there was a new sense of liberation, that God is always up to a new thing. And so we have come to a day in the life of our church family's story where we believe that God is doing a new thing. And you know, when Russell and I started dreaming about a mode of being for us and a church and school that would sort of dissolve the boundaries of our family or of the community, of the idea of the church being just a building, and we started dreaming about reinvesting it, our assets in partnership for the good of our community. You know, there was work that needed to be done in terms of aligning the boards of all of the organisations involved, the church and the school and Baptist churches of South Australia. And one person on who was part of one of those teams said, I think that it's a great idea, but listen, a church isn't going to, he said to me, he goes, Mike, do you think that a church is really going to intentionally disrupt itself and dislocate itself for a period of years? He goes, I just can't. He said, I'm with you. I'm for you. He said, I think it's a great idea. It's a great model for other people to follow in terms of actually recognizing the ways that churches can meaningfully engage with their community. He goes, I just don't think it's going to happen, but by all means, go for it. And the reality is, of course, is that in the midst of telling the story that God has ahead of us, there will actually be some pain at times, I'm sure. There's going to be disruption. But we've got great support structures. We've got great legs supporting the stool. And more than that, we've got a reason to head in this direction, because God is in the midst of doing a new thing amongst us. God is in the midst of bringing new life in new spaces with new people as well as old people. New relationships, deeper relationships, deeper journeys with Jesus, new structures, new services, the desire to grow, because ecosystems that are healthy grow, but the desire to grow deep. And if I had of given this a little bit more thought, I would have clicked once more and you would have seen roots running down all through the soil there. Because there's a desire for us in the midst of what it is that God's up to grow deep with one another, as well as wide, as well as high. So I want to encourage you, as you consider what it was the heck that Mike was talking about this morning, lobsters and septic tanks, my goodness, be like Peter. Face your fears. They're not as bad as you think. Well, they might be, actually. I take that back. But you'll be okay. You'll be okay. What the cross leads us to is the realization that the worst can happen. The worst does happen. and we'll be okay. Be a lobster. Stand up straight with your shoulders back and embrace the future with all that it has for us as we look to this new chapter ahead of us this morning. And with that being said, I'd actually like to invite Darren McDonald up at this time, and he's going to share with us the results of the votes that you posted on your way in the door this morning. Do you have a microphone, mate? No?
Hello. We're on. We're on now? All right, excellent. Thanks, Mike. I only caught the tail end of your message, Mike, but I'm not really sure what that was. But I probably had to hear the whole thing.
Well, maybe. Maybe.
Really happy to report back that we've had a significant vote today, probably the biggest vote that I've had since I've been here at King's Baptist Church. And so I'm really happy to report we had 87 people vote and overwhelmingly in support of the motion. And so that will be passed. And so we are moving into the next phase of our life together, which will be a joint entity with King's Baptist Church and King's Baptist Grammar School to undertake Master Plan 2.0. So thanks everyone for engaging.